irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is 8 o'clock. It is Thursday evening. This is LA Talk Radio, and you are listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, here in the studio tonight with a wonderfully charming and deliciously lovely Bobby Jean Bell. And her husband, Jim, of course, is in here. Hi, Jim. And I have to ask, how was the Cowboy Bebop last week?
Oh, Cowbop was in the house, and they were fantastic. They gave us just a wonderful night of Western swing music. And they've added a few new pieces to their repertoire, including a little cowboy poetry delivered by Bruce Foreman, the lead on for Cowbop. And it was filmed, and it should be up and available to watch probably in the next week or so at scvtv.com.
Cool.
Yeah, it was great.
Cool. Well, you know, for those of you who don't know, Bobby Jean on the fourth Thursday of every month has her Out West concert series, and she goes out there and she has some pretty good people in, and then our host at that night is Russ Avison, comes in and fills in. And last week we had Russ here and we talked to a really, really nice lady.
It is a great show.
Jeannie Charter. She was just absolutely fun. I mean, she's a little nervous at first, but boy, when she got into it, she had a ball.
And you guys were having a great time.
We had a good time. She was really a nice lady, and we really had a good time with her. I just got back from Pittsburgh.
And you're wide awake, though.
I don't know how. I drank a pot of coffee like between 5 and 6:30. So it's eventually the caffeine's going to crash, and so am I.
But you're going to be wide awake for this hour.
Of course I am. Yeah. And what's the name of the show? Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley, by Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in New Hall, and by Target Freight Management in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And, you know, we mention Target Freight every show, and we do that because, of course, they pay the bills, which is really nice. But they have a full truckload service that's absolutely the best in the industry. But we have mentioned that on TFM Truckload. Get your freight there every time, on time. No muss, no fuss at the rates you need for your transportation bottom line. Call today. Call them at 844-653-7789. And as Bobby says, get that pencil out. It's 844-653-7789. Tell them you heard it here in The Writer's Block, and they're going to have a little something extra for you. And I'm not going to tell you what it is, but I do know what it is. And, you know, while we're at it, if you're an LTL shopper or shipper, or if you're LTL something or other, you're probably looking for the best rates at the lowest hassle possible. Well, then you need to call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just the ticket in getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today. Their number is 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. Call today. You won't be sorry you did. I'm never sorry. I use them every day.
What was that phone number again?
Which one?
The second one.
888-653-1323.
I got it.
Okay. And if you want to call in tonight, talk to our guest, and we'll be introducing him in just a second here. The number in the studio is 818-602-4929. And this young man has no idea what he's in for tonight.
No, he doesn't.
No, we have in studio tonight somebody that came all the way from Irvine. I find that really cool because, I mean, you know, we can't even get people from Beverly Hills to come in.
And it's so great to have the guest in the house.
I know, and it's just so that, you know, I'm not going to go there. Tonight's guest, he's a native Californian, never stepped his foot out of the state until he was in his 30s. Now he's traveled extensively. In his imagination, he's trained in, you know, prosaic fields of economics and law. You're a lawyer?
Yes.
Holy crap.
That's why he's got the legal
pad
out.
But I do still have a soul.
Yeah, but you're still a shark.
With a soul.
We're gonna let this gentleman kind of tell you about himself real quick. Please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Jack Martin.
What can I say after an intro like that?
So we have a little applause for you.
gosh. I got an applause.
You did.
You love me.
And the meter went up to like plus 50. I think this is what, your second interview, first radio interview?
Yes. I was on a podcast before this.
Well, this is going to be on a podcast too, but this is going out live
right
internationally.
Now. Yes, right now.
Okay, I'll
but
try.
Don't worry, you're great.
I'll try not to start a war.
No. But if you want your relatives in Finland to listen to you, all you have to do is go to LA Talk Radio. They can listen to you live.
Well,
which is kind of cool. So, Jack, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we're going to get into the book that Bobby and I both read this week,
mm-hmm.
which we both liked.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
As your introduction said, I'm that rarity, a native-born Californian who had native-born Californian ancestors. As a matter of fact, through my maternal grandmother, I had an ancestor here in the 1830s, before it was part of the United States. I can't imagine living anywhere else. People say, oh, we like seasons, we like the snow. Okay, go to Big Bear.
Yeah, go to Big Bear.
Yeah, we have it in parts of the state.
Say, oh, you like the forest? Okay, go up Northern California.
Yeah, go to Sequoias.
It's got everything I like. It is such a diverse state and a very productive state. You've got the aerospace industry. You've got the marijuana fields. And this is the center of the
such
international pornography industry.
Yep, you're a lawyer.
Yes. I went to UCLA for a total of 7 years, undergraduate and graduate. Received an economics degree undergraduate, law degree. We did have to sign a special book in our own blood when we graduated. The law school. Actually, the most moral people I know have been lawyers. But we do enjoy lawyer jokes.
Good, because we love telling them.
For virtually my entire career, I worked in aerospace, partly for the government, and then partly for private industry. It might not surprise our viewers that the most unethical behavior I saw was almost exclusively in the government field. And that although part of my career was involved in making sure everyone at the Boeing company walked the straight and narrow, they did, for the most part. We did have one employee at Boeing. A little bit of a digression. You watch movies, you watch TV, and the villains are extremely brilliant and are only captured because the heroes are even more brilliant. We had an engineer at one Boeing site, I won't name it, who decided he wasn't being paid enough. And so he committed an armed robbery at a convenience store across the street. Went out into the parking lot, you know, got a mask, got a gun, stuck it up, went back to his desk where he was arrested about half an hour later because he neglected to take off his picture ID.
Oh, gosh.
Which listed his name and where he worked.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, think of it. This guy's working on some of the planes that you may fly in the future.
Jack.
My life was very, very sad and lonely until I met my one true love and managed to keep her from my wife's attention. No. Seriously, my wife, Sonia, made me a much better man. I consider the high point of my life the 27 years we were married, 18 of the best years of my life. To be very serious, though, she passed away after a long struggle with ovarian cancer. A very brave woman. She I cannot give her enough praise. Everyone who knew her loved her. And for some strange reason, she loved me. It is proof that if you look for the right person, they're out there. She was the one who encouraged me to take up writing again. Now, as a man in my 20s, I had drafted a couple of novels that received rejection slips that ought to have been banned by the Geneva Convention. They utterly destroyed my ego as an author. And so after a hiatus of 25-some-odd years, well, I was usually with Sonia when she was undergoing her chemo treatments. Hopefully you don't know what that's like. It's painful and lengthy. And to keep her mind off of it, I would tell her stories. She liked them. She made me promise that I would take up writing again. And one of the biggest regrets of my life is she passed away before my first acceptance. I regard her inspiration, her encouragement, as making me an acceptable author. And after that rambling self-description...
Okay.
And what? You've written a number of books.
Six novels in all.
Okay.
Five are a series of Civil War mystery slash thrillers. Mm-hmm. And I've started a new series, which I guess we'll talk about the first book in that series primarily tonight, which is set in the Great Depression. I gave it the title, Brother, Can You Spare a Dime?
From the song of the same title.
Mm-hmm. Yes. If you've never heard the song, listen to it on YouTube. There are several versions. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind that this very melancholy and depressed song was the most popular song in the country for about 3 years in terms of sales. It expressed an angst we can't imagine today. When I write historical novels, my primary goal is to entertain. People never like to be lectured to. But when I saw how my son and his friends, who graduated, had advanced degrees, well, granted, they were from USC, but still...
Damn them.
University of second choice. They were remarkably ignorant of American history. Now, these are all young men, advanced degrees. They've gone beyond the baccalaureate. They did not know when Pearl Harbor occurred. That is literally true.
Really?
Really. Find someone who's a Gen Xer and ask him some very basic things about American history. He did not know the years of the Civil War. Now, he also tells me, what does this mean? Why is this significant? Well, it's not significant as an accumulation of dates and of names. But if you don't know what the country has gone through and how it's become what it is today, you'll have no idea as to what's coming in the future. And you are condemned to make the same mistakes that many of our ancestors did. So... a subsidiary, very subsidiary goal of my writing is to give young readers By young, I mean Gen Xers and like that. A feeling for the country. I try not to bury them in facts and dates. But I want to, for instance, give them a feel for the Great Depression. Now, people my age, and you know, that means 39 or older.
Which we are all of.
49 or older.
Yeah. We all heard the stories from our parents. And maybe we listened and maybe we didn't, but at least we heard how it was. The Gen Xers don't hear the stories from their parents. And apparently, they're not required to do any reading. For instance, measured as we measure unemployment today, the unemployment rate was over 30% through most of the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. And there was no social safety net as we understand it today. Now, churches and private charities did the best they could, but it was spotty. They can't imagine the desperation of people, the hopelessness. It was going on and didn't seem to end.
Mm-hmm. There was also the big lines around the block for the soup kitchens and the breads and
any ad for you know, help wanted.
Yeah.
You'd have thousands of people show up for that, you know, that one position.
For a hod carrier.
Yeah.
Well, for instance, in my latest work, I always try to emphasize the lines of the homeless. Today, there's homeless, but the majority are probably mentally ill. That was not the case in the Great Depression. These were people who'd been well-adjusted, good workers. There were signs outside of cities, jobless keep going, we can't take care of our own. I remember my mother telling me that she was a typical Okie who came from Oklahoma when the Great Depression and the
Dust Bowl,
which happened at the same time, blew the farm away. She and all cars with Oklahoma license plates were stopped at the border, and the occupants deloused.
Mm. Wow.
Now, my sainted grandmother was the cleanest person I ever knew. Mm-hmm. And the humiliation of that came up from time to time till the time she passed away. I'm sorry, I'm running on a little bit.
Well, it's interesting. We both really enjoyed this book,
yes.
Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? And you had me from the very first page. It's fascinating that you weave into this story a lot of the names that we may be familiar with from watching movies or, mm-hmm. You know, from a Frank Nitti to a Bonnie and Clyde and J. Edgar mm-hmm. Hoover. And it starts out with an assassination attempt
right.
on the president-elect. So he's not even in office
right.
yet, FDR.
And he winds up shooting the mayor of Chicago.
In Miami. And a little known fact. And I felt as I read the book that you really enjoy bringing out little known facts, and you like, you enjoyed weaving together things that happened in this time period that we wouldn't necessarily
right.
have connected other than in pop culture. Tell us a little bit about that premise and how you connected these characters.
Well, first of all, my protagonist will meet a number of historic characters that, if you step back and really think about it, it's unlikely he would have met that many. But I like writing an exciting story.
Mm-hmm.
The attempt on FDR's life in February of 1933 was genuine. 5 shots were fired at him. 4 people were wounded. I did not emphasize that in the... And 1, the mayor of Chicago killed.
Right. Well, he got a bullet in the belly and just died about 3 days later. Right.
Imagine how the world would, not just the United States, the world would have been different. Vice President Garner was an isolationist and a bigot. No question about it. He was a Klansman. Imagine what the Depression would have been like, how we probably would have stayed out of the war, maybe even allied ourselves with Nazi Germany. Because I went back and looked into some of the Vice President Garner's opinions, and they really, if you substituted Jew for black, it was something that would have come out of Nazi propaganda. So there was also, and it's, by the way, I make some assumptions in the book.
Really?
Not everything is historical.
But a lot is.
Number one, the man who shot the mayor and attempted to shoot FDR was tried, convicted, and electrocuted in about a month, which even in the 1930s was booking.
Right.
Yeah.
I have a small suspicion, I'm not saying it's a certainty or even likely, that things were moved along to get him under the ground before he could talk too much.
No, you're probably right.
An implication that more might have been involved there. I mean, look at how we consider the conspiracy about President Kennedy. Secondly, it ties in ultimately with the assassination of Huey Long, which is more known. I mean, there's been two great movies done about it.
Mm-hmm.
Little known fact, as Cliff from Cheers used to say, the doctor, Dr. Weiss, who fired two shots at Huey Long with a .32 caliber pistol, was gunned down. They eventually dug more than 60 bullets out of it.
Yeah, they cut him up pretty good.
According to at least one report, yes, Huey Long died of a .32 caliber bullet wound. It did not match the ballistics on Weiss's gun.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they could match ballistics on two bullets that did not strike Governor Long or Senator Long, and neither of those bullets were anywhere near hitting Long. Interestingly, the bullet and the ballistics tests have since disappeared.
Well, Harry Beers threw the gun in the river.
Don't listen to that. Don't listen. You didn't hear that. Strike that.
Spoiler alert.
Now, do I think it is likely there were conspiracies here? No. Though it's possible. And I thought it would be fun to make up a fictional connection between them.
Now, I think that, and it is, it's really a fun, entertaining read. We meet Bonnie and Clyde. We meet John Dillinger, walks on his hands, you know.
Which is true.
He used to do that.
And Anna was not wearing a red dress, folks.
It was orange.
It was orange.
The newspapers couldn't get away from the red dress.
And we met Machine Gun Kelly.
Yes, we meet them all. And it is Harry that brings them all together. And tell us a little bit more about him. He's got pale blue eyes behind gold-rimmed glasses.
He's a little guy.
And
I see him as short and slight. Blonde-haired, blue-eyed. He is of German descent, but I deliberately chose that coloration because of the association with the Nazi stereotype. He is a man with immense capacity for violence, which he sincerely struggles with.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it is his genetic inheritance. I hint at that, frankly, in the earlier Civil War books. I don't want to give away too much.
Well, we haven't read those, so.
No, we're meeting him here for the first time.
There's definitely an implication that there is something inhuman about him. I put it there, not supernatural. He's not necessarily a ghost or a vampire or a werewolf. Certainly not a sparkling vampire. I hate those. You know, romantic vampires I despise.
And he's not a zombie.
No, he's not a zombie.
No zombies here.
As a matter of fact, he's extremely fastidious.
Yes.
He dresses very well.
Yeah, to the nines, I know that.
And is obsessively clean.
And fearless.
Yes, there's a part of him, and it's more apparent from my prior works, that wants to die. He has lost someone very precious to him, and nothing in a lot of years has ever brought that back. Quite frankly, I think I was inspired to that by the passing of my own wife. If you have a good relationship, as we did, you never get over the loss. It's now been 6 years since my wife passed away. I miss her as much now as I did a month after her passing. I'm not sure you're supposed to ever get rid of it. Now, unfortunately, I've known people who would have, you know, a week afterwards gone to Vegas and visited some of those bunny ranches. But I knew a guy, and this is true, at Boeing. He was in his late 70s, and they had a great savings plan and a great pension. And I told him, why don't you retire? And he says, I'm waiting for my wife to die. See, I can't stand being home with her all the time.
Oh, my gosh.
And I thought that was so sad.
Yeah, that's very sad.
That's really sad.
Now, that is literally true. Sometimes I joke around, but this is true.
And that'll probably end up in one of his books.
I totally get that. I totally get that. Hey, look, we're going to take a little break here, and we're going to give you some Jim Jones music tonight.
Okay.
And just kind of give everybody a bathroom break and just let them know that, you know, we love them. We're still here. We're going to give you a little smoke on the, what is it?
Oh, gosh. I'm unprepared.
It's Jim Jones. Here he comes.
Where the grass is getting greener, the Frio Rio flows. I guess you gave up on me a long time ago while I was standing in the smoke of the brandy.
And we're coming back to see you right now. And if you're just now joining us, we have Jack Martin in the studio tonight, the writer of this great, great, great story, Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? And a whole Civil War series. And
I have to read that series.
I know, huh? Now you got to go out and buy it. Unless, of course, Jack wants to like donate it to the show, and then of course,
if I thought about it, I would.
we have a question we ask all our writers because, of course, this is the writer's block. Have you ever experienced writer's block?
Yes.
Aha.
I know of no writer who hasn't.
Oh, we know of several that will swear to God they've never had it.
Then you know several liars.
That could very well be.
No, I belong to a, what you might call a writer's support group. Ladies of Intrigue. They accept men, too.
Well, gee, I hope so, if you belong to them.
Yeah, you know, I'm vice president. I mean, hey, I'm the only man there. I get treated well. We discuss, most of them have been published authors, a few quite successful. And we have sessions at least once a month where we talk about what we've done, how we write, where we get our ideas. And writer's block comes up.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it does.
We've reached a consensus. The best way to deal with writer's block is to write. Even if it is not on your current work, even if it's stuff you know you'll throw away. Now, everyone gets to a time when other things are occupying their mind. Like, I haven't made much progress in the last couple, 3 months because my father's entering his final illness. And I need to see him, need to take care of him. He was always there for us. By the way, my brother and I were discussing it, and it turns out we've decided, having talked to friends, acquaintances, we had a remarkably good family upbringing. Yeah, we had a few issues with our parents, but it was basically about their laying guilt trips on us, and that's just what parents do. That's a definition of a parent. They instill good values in us. And then I hear from other people, and I won't give away even anonymously their secrets. It reads like horror stories.
Hey, Bobby Jean never had wild Christmases like we did when we were kids.
No, I had.
She was like demure and quiet,
upbringing.
And
wonderful upbringing.
We were like so insane.
And I didn't know for years until, again, you know, sharing with other friends and seeing that my family was sort of different from everybody else because we were functional.
Well, we were dysfunctional.
Trying to come fabulous, up with you
know?
Functional.
You know, we had no idea that the rest of the world was like dysfunctional. We thought everybody was like us, you know.
Now, there's functional, there's functional. My wife's family, let me back up. You've seen, and people listening have seen, my big fat Greek wedding.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
My wife was ethnic Armenian, so I lived that. Number one, everyone shouted at everyone.
Well, it's my family, they're Italians.
Yeah, in my family, shouting was cause for divorce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had no shouting in my family.
And when I first heard this shouting, I thought, there's going to be bloodshed. And it carried over a little bit to our son, who takes very much after his mother, and I love that. When he was still living at home, I come home one day from work. My wife and I both worked at Boeing, but she would get home earlier. There's a police car with rotating lights in my driveway. You can imagine the kinds of things that were going through my head. Well, I get in. And I find out that my wife and son had been arguing about politics. I won't go into who took what position. The argument got louder and louder until the next door neighbor called in a domestic disturbance. And the police responded to my house for a domestic disturbance. I'm white trash now. I'm going to appear on Cops.
No, it takes three calls to be white trash. It only takes one call to be trailer trash.
Okay, but to get back to writer's block, so writing right through it is kind of what you're saying, is that's a great solution. We love to hear the solutions. We know that we've got writers out there that listen, and this is, you know, great advice. This is another way to get through it. Just write.
We have a lot of new writers that listen to the show that get a lot of ideas out of the show. So
now your research, you did, I mean, here's where all of these books are set in historical time and you bring out a lot of real facts. How do you go about doing your research?
In my case, it was a bit of a cheat. Until I hit puberty, I was quite ill, missed a lot of school. Then about the time I was eligible for the draft, it all cleared up. And
of course.
But I read an awful lot. There were long periods when that was all I could do. And for some reason, it's hard to trace why. From the time I was about 10, I had an utter fascination with American history, especially the period of the Civil War and of the periods of World War I and World War II and between them. I found it fascinating because to me, real people were involved. I could visualize them. It wasn't just like it is for many people who read history, endless numbers, endless dates, endless names. Now, in researching specific issues today, because of course I need to research individual ones, I'm not ashamed to say I have a reliance initially on Wikipedia.
Doesn't everybody?
Man, I wish I'd had that in college.
Yeah, but Wikipedia doesn't always give you the whole story either.
And they don't get it always right.
That is correct.
But it's a starting point. Mm-hmm. And I often go to the list of references at the end of a lengthy article. You often find that there are conflicting views on this, that, or the other. That's history.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes even the people who lived it don't know all that went on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Father of a friend of mine was a survivor of the Arizona. He had no real knowledge of what was going on, and he was in the middle of it. He was on a sunken battleship.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll never even get close to the truth unless you consult multiple sources. Even sources that you might not approve of the person who wrote it, but they might have an insight.
Mm-hmm.
Don't believe everything.
No.
Oh, by the way, an excellent secondary starting point is the CIA webpage. Are you aware that they, first of all, that you go to the CIA webpage, they're advertising for people to work overseas who know various languages and like that. There's no skulking around now.
I've never been on their webpage.
No.
They have a thing called the World Book. It's every non-classified fact about every nation on Earth updated to about the last 60 days.
Oh, my gosh.
You want to know how many cell phones are in Albania? They will tell you.
Oh, my gosh.
You want to know how many miles of road there are in the Ukraine and how much of it is paved versus gravel? They will tell you. They will tell you the complete ethnic background, the history. It's an amazing resource. And should be used, especially if your writing involves something overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And they even have live support. You know, you
can
You can type in and get a live person.
And
I'll tell you something that sounds like a joke, but it's true. I was doing some research on international oil production. I got stymied, so I typed in a question. They answered in the little box real quickly. And I gave them a nice thank you. And as sort of a joke, I said, by the way, can you tell me if you folks have a file on me? And back comes the answer, we do now.
That's a
Which
joke.
I hope was a joke.
Wow, that's an interesting tidbit.
Okay, along with research, where do you do your writing? Give us a typical writing day for you.
Okay. Usually 3 hours before noon.
Before noon?
Yes.
Okay.
I find it gets harder as the day goes on because things come up. Judge Judy's on, you know, that kind of stuff.
Dr. Phil.
I'm over Dr. Phil.
Oh, the book he watches.
People's Court.
Every day.
No, that's the one. just personally, me, I seem fresher in the morning. Mm-hmm. I have a little corner in the dining room. You get light coming from two sets of windows at angles to each other, and it looks out over our garden.
Yeah.
It's quiet. It's well lit. Few disturbances, except the telemarketers.
Turn the phone off.
Well, no, I've found how to deal with them. You know, they'll call up and they want to sell me something. And I say, well, I am interested, but can I ask you a question first? This throws them off their
script.
So they say, well, okay. And I say, has Jesus entered your life? Click!
Tidbit number two.
I sure hope God has a sense of humor.
He does. He created man.
He has to. Have you ever seen the ostrich?
Yeah, he has a fabulous sense of humor. Great sense of humor.
So
3 hours in the morning, and then Judge Judy in the afternoon.
And do you write longhand? Do you type? You know, do you talk into?
I'm guessing laptop, huh?
I use a laptop. I used to love to write longhand.
Score.
But it's just so darn easy to edit.
Oh, yeah.
To cut and paste.
Spell check.
Yes. Although, don't rely. Here's a tip for writers.
Don't rely on spell check.
Totally on.
I know.
No, right.
It'll get you. ITS, that's a good one.
Before I retired, I was looking at a document that was destined to go to our corporate headquarters. Very important document. It was analyzing a proposal by a supplier. Very good analysis. You know, it had the hourly rate, and over in this column, the rape rate.
Oh, gosh.
Meaning for those who are accountants, the rap rate. Maybe the
How
next
much was
generation.
The rape rate?
Well, of course, maybe it was high. Maybe that's what they meant. But at least the current generation of spell check sometimes lets the wrong word in correctly spelled.
Mm-hmm. I'm
sure we've all run into that.
Yes.
You still need to eyeball proof your product.
Absolutely.
Right.
Do you enjoy writing dialogue?
I found that hard at first. Let me tell you one of several considerations that went into my starting with a Civil War series. As I was learning to write dialogue, I could get away more with stilted or artificial-seeming dialogue because people did talk that way. Now I think I'm getting into more naturalistic. Yes, writing dialogue is one of the hardest things I've found to learn. And I'm getting better at it.
Because you write historical fiction and oftentimes there's, you know, actual real, they're real characters, do you, in your research, do you find quotes or things that they supposedly said that you actually use as part of dialogue?
Yes. I often don't lift it word for word, but sometimes I do. For instance, in the latest one, the dying words of the mayor of Chicago were exactly what he said, but he said them in the hospital.
Right, not in the back of a car.
Yes. Once again, I have no compunction on changing history to keep the drama going.
Right.
Because I'm not writing a docudrama.
There you go.
What other question do you want to ask about process?
Actually, we're going to have to kind of wrap this up.
Know,
we're running out of time.
No.
So, I tell you what, we can sit here and listen to you for. But right now, we got to wrap some up. I got to make some announcements. And so, if you let our listeners know where we can reach you, email address, website,
how they buy your books.
Yes.
We know Gene Loicano is your agent.
The easiest place to buy them is, guess what?
Amazon.
And I especially urge listeners to buy it there because my son is now an executive at Amazon.
Oh.
And the more they sell, you know, the greater his bonuses.
There you go.
But you can also go to your website.
Yes. It's jacksmartin.com. And they have links to the books that go back to Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If you become interested in the Civil War series, the very first one, if you want to follow it from the beginning, they are written as independent stories. But if you want to follow the saga of a certain Union officer, start with John Brown's Body.
Well, that was listed first on your...
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes. A side note on the Civil War novels. I'm one of the very few people who writes fiction in the Civil War who is totally anti-Southern. I write it completely from a Union point of view.
Well, we just lost all of our listeners south of the Mason-Dixon line.
Well, let me tell you, you'll have someone to hate.
I don't think we have that problem.
The series of titles are all titles of popular Union mm-hmm. Civil War songs, mostly forgotten today.
Mm-hmm.
Email address, I love talking to people, even if it's electronically. And isn't that a contradiction in terms, talking to people on a keyboard? But it's all lowercase, JackSMartin42. Apparently there are 41 other Jack S. Martins.
Or you're dreaming.
At gmail.com.
Well, this has been really fun.
It has been.
I'm so glad you came in the studio.
Oh, my gosh. It's just been great. And we really want to thank you. Coming up from Irvine especially, I mean, that's a haul.
Hey, I viewed it as an opportunity for my own private music festival.
There you go. There you go. And, Jack, again, thank you for coming in and visiting us. Get a hold of the bookie. Maybe we can get you rebooked. Probably not until 2016, however. And I have an announcement. Actually, I have two.
Oh.
I had an email today from our good friend Court Joyner.
Courtney Joyner.
He wanted to tell me that he was not going to be at the Buckaroo Bookshop this year because he wants to have a new title ready,
mm-hmm.
which is not going to be ready until the end of the year.
June.
Right.
It's going to be ready in June.
Oh, is it?
I think.
But then he wants to be booked on the show again at the end of the year, which will be the slot that's available for him. And he wanted to say that he's listened to the show and Henry and everything else, and they just absolutely loves it. He said, it's just a great show. And so thank you, Court, from the bottom of my little Italian heart. You're
our
such a good boy.
Our first guest. You know, we're coming up on an anniversary.
I know. Our first year is May 21st.
And the Buckaroo Bookshop does return, and next week I'll do a quick thing on who's coming and what we got going on.
Next week we have, who do we have? Oh, Ken LaSalle.
Right.
Well, I had to make a phone call to Ken this weekend because, and in studio also with us is one of the original horse sluts, the slut herself.
Yes.
Candace Wade.
Candace Wade.
And like we said, she's probably going to bogart a good half or three quarters of the show, so it'll be fun. That's next week. Now, June 16th, which is a Thursday, in case anybody's wondering, because they're all Thursdays, we have the Writer's Block family in studio. So it'll be Bobby and me and the bookie and Jim and Russ.
Oh, good. And Russ. Oh, wonderful.
So we'll all be here. It'll be kind of like our mid-year Christmas show.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have five spots left.
I can't
for the year.
Five spots left for the entire year.
For the year. And so we have been on the air since May 21st. We now are booked through 2016.
And we are now on iTunes.
And we are now on iTunes
and
Stitcher. So if you go there, you can go in and get our podcast at Stitcher and iTunes, and we're just extremely excited.
And use our Facebook page, please. Are you a past guest?
Yes.
Have you got a book you're working on? Or, you know, use the Facebook page to post what you've got going on. We would love to see that become more of a dialogue space and letting people know about what you're doing.
And I want to let everybody know that, yes, we actually do give out Writer's Block coffee mugs.
Yes, we do. You posted
Mr. Martin
great picture,
got one tonight.
Yes.
And we have the picture posted on Facebook.
Yes.
And now when you get home, you have to take a selfie with your yeah, kind of like
we'll
that.
We'll get one out in the lobby.
And put it on our Writer's Block Facebook page.
Right.
So, yeah, we'll get one out in the lobby too. So that's it for tonight. Thank you so much for joining us. If you're just now joining us, you're too late.
Listen to it on podcast. It'll be up in about 3 minutes.
Yep, Ronan, we'll get it up. Ronan's the engineer from hell. He's a DVD.
And we're
going to
be on his show next Wednesday.
And we're going to be on Sam's show.
Sam
in the Morning on Channel 1, 10 o'clock Wednesday morning. It'll be Bobby Jean and I on Sam in the Morning. And that should be interesting, if nothing else.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. With that, Bobby Jean, say goodnight.
Goodnight.
Goodnight.